Lord, take these guns away from me. Cause I can't shoot them anymore.
That's country and western singer Dolly Parton. Yes, it is Dolly Parton teaming up with South Africa's Ladysmith Black Mambazo on folk singer Bob Dylan's famous Knockin' on Heaven's Door, all into a reggae beat. That's from Ladysmith's Rain, Rain, Beautiful Rain album, released in 2004. Music, in many ways, overcomes the limitations of the world. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead. It is Thursday, August the 21st, and an international manhunt is underway for the fighter shown in a video of beheading journalist James Foley, and the focus is on Britain. Foley's masked executioner spoke with an English accent, a British accent, and language experts have placed the accent in London. The Pentagon said U.S. Special Forces earlier this summer had attempted a rescue operation to free Foley and other U.S. hostages held in Syria by the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS, now calling itself the Islamic State, but the mission failed. They could not locate the hostages. The Islamic State had demanded a $100 million ransom for Foley, but the U.S. did not yield to their demand. The extremist group also made similar demands of his parents, Diane and John Foley, and regularly tormented them by email. The Foleys said yesterday they were haunted by the cruelty of his death, but believe their son had accepted his fate. They plead with the Islamic State to spare other journalists in their clutches. The Islamic State said Foley's execution was payback for U.S. airstrikes in Iraq against the insurgency there. James Foley was a conflict reporter who went missing in Syria almost 2 years ago. The president has vowed a relentless pursuit of the Islamic State terrorist organization. Small crowds staged largely peaceful protests late yesterday and overnight over the fatal shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. It's been the calmest night since the riots erupted over the racially charged killing. Of 163 arrests since the shooting, 7 are from Ferguson. Well, it's time for a checkup. We go regularly for a medical checkup, and as you know, here from time to time on Lead Stories, we take stock of our political consciousness as a way of tracking our understanding and interpretation of our day-to-day reality and how we're functioning or not functioning within it. Understanding informs behaviors and actions. So ultimately, the point of this exercise is to gauge the impact of our various realities on our thinking and how, in turn, this is affecting our actions in the spheres of influence we happen to be operating in, whether it's family, community, organizations, etc. So how have recent issues and events affected your political consciousness? How has your reality been changed by them? What new ground have you gained in understanding the way systems work or don't work? And what have you learned about yourself and your ability to make a difference. There's no expectation of right or wrong here. In fact, that doesn't matter. It's just what you are thinking that matters. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We're discussing what informs our political consciousness, what have we learned, and how has it changed what you call your consciousness? In what ways has it done so? And how will that in turn affect your actions? This new thinking that you acquired in the last several months, observing the way systems work, because in the end, life is all about the interplay between society and the systems that control society, government and society. And in that intersection, we develop an idea, we develop a view or views about what our role is, and specifically our role within that context. We've had so many crises unfold in the past several months. We've had so many issues that we've discussed here. And I'm wondering, what is your thinking now? Where are you now? Where do you locate yourself on the political spectrum? Is it different from, let's say, a year or so ago? Is it different even from months ago? How have you been affected by these issues and events, not only the ones that we've discussed, but the ones that you've observed and analyzed on your own? And how, with this new perspective that is assuming that you have something new, or maybe you haven't changed, but how are you situated today? How do you make sense of your political reality? Now, why are we asking these questions? We're asking the question because, in the end, we are a group of people. I think it runs generally through the audience that we envision ourselves in one way or the other as being politically conscious people, people who have developed or invested in developing an understanding of systems and how they impact our day-to-day lives. And with that consciousness, we make certain decisions in our lives. We make the decisions about how we spend our money, where we live and how we live, how we interact with people, what we see as our purpose, whether we see ourselves as agents of change, whether we see ourselves as just passive bystanders. I mean, this is one of the things that we have to deal with. And we also have to ask ourselves a question. If we are, in fact, politically conscious people, what then is the role that you've chosen in light of recent events within the communities that you live? I know, it's kind of esoteric today, but that's the purpose of the conversation. Because, you know, I've talked a lot about this business of applying labels to ourselves. I really shun the notion of labels because I really believe that most people applying labels don't really understand what these labels are. But we do. We have a concept of who we are and what we are thinking. What is it that you're thinking? What is your political consciousness right now in this time? What has shaped it? And with that consciousness, therefore, what is your function, or how do you see yourself functioning in day-to-day reality with other people, with yourself, in communities that you live, organizations that you are a part of, in ways that you can make changes within your sphere of influence? Okay? So that's the question. It's kind of, as I said, it's kind of esoteric, but every now and then we need to ask these questions of ourselves. From Los Angeles, Ed, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice.
Hello.
Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for all you do. And I started listening to you recently, and I've gained so much knowledge about the outrage in Detroit and the coverage in Ferguson and the lawyers you've had on your show. So I just wanted to thank you for all that you do. I mean,
thank you so much.
You're a new addition to my life as far as listening and gathering information, and I really appreciate what you bring to Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that my views about the world are, we're in a predatory environment. Predatory in that it's one company or one big political thing that's buying up another. And the punishment of people in this society right now are the homeless, the poor, the minorities, and it's going to move up the food chain as our environment continues to squeeze us, as the militarization of our police force, as the austerity of our government. I mean, our voice doesn't really even matter now when we go to the polls. We're just voting for one party that's represented by the same corporation versus another.
So with that in mind, how do you function? How do you keep it together? What do you do
I'll get a little personal. My wife had a stroke 4 years ago, and I became a full-time caregiver to her. So I can't afford, unfortunately, go to the protests. You know, there are things I do where I do call to actions, and, you know, I call my congressman, I write letters, I listen to you, I listen to Gary. But there's something inside of me, unfortunately, that developed recently that's very fatalistic about our survival. And that has to do with Guy McPherson's predictions that we're no longer be on this planet by 2030, the Fukushima leaking radiation in the oceans. All of the problems that could cause extinction seem to be a reality. Now, how I function? Through laughter, ironically. I used to be a comedian before my wife had a stroke, and I hope to return to the stage one day and talk about all these issues that no comedian's really talking about. They're not talking about our extinction. They're not talking about, you know, they're talking about relationships and so on. And I'm thankful that I have a great wife. So I function by being kind to people. I function by doing inner spiritual work because I really believe that the solutions in the world have to do with us going inside of ourselves and raising our consciousness spiritually. And that means loving one another, caring about one another. These are things that unfortunately have gotten lost. At least, I mean, in the 60s and 70s, there was a genuine sense of caring about one another and a concern about one another. And I'm not talking about individually, but consciously as a society, we've become very predatory. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we're not even looking at the issues that could cause our extinction. Our leaders aren't. Fortunately, we have people like Guy McPherson. We have people like Harvey Wasserman that are looking out and talking about the dangers of the environment. And Gary Noll has had people on. You've had people on about the Hanford nuclear power plant. But, you know, when you look at the television, which is the larger source of information that people get their stuff from, which is basically owned by huge corporations, you're getting deception, you're getting lies, you're getting a focus that's not really the focus that it should be. When you look at the way CNN covered the, I mean, the Ferguson thing, you know, they just kept showing him robbing in the store. Here they're telling you that it's suspicious that the video comes out the very day that they keep showing it over and over again. And that's the thing I noticed, you know, was the prejudice and all that. And so you most people, unfortunately, get their reality more and more going to Progressive Radio Network, but most people get this very deceptive reality that things are okay, but that you should be afraid of stuff like the Ebola virus. You know, we're not going to talk about Fukushima. We're not going to talk about the economy getting worse. We're not going to talk about the police being militarized, not because of the actual militarization, but because of Homeland Security, because of this thing we call the Patriot Act. which is now basically militarized our police force. This Patriot Act that we're all supposed to worry about the terrorists, it's just a way to control us. And wow. Unfortunately, we're all the terrorists. So the way I function, laughter, humor, you got to step back. It's not easy, but that's what I do, is I step back and I laugh and I try to be as nice to people as possible. And it really, the answers for me, they have to come inside. I have to go inside myself and look for that compassion, look for that love, look for that universality that binds us all together. Look for the similarities in all of us that will bring us together instead of the differences that are separating us now.
Thank you. Thanks for your very considered opinion today. Thank you, Ed, for calling.
Thank you very much.
888-874-4888 is the number. What's going on with your political consciousness? What's the state of affairs with that? That's what we want to know. Are you changed in your view? Are you even more set in your view? What has affected your thinking in the past several months since the last time we did an audit? What have you come up with in examining those issues and events that have had a great resonance with you and that impacted you very significantly? Where does that place you now in the scheme of things? And what, therefore, is the difference between the way you used to function and the way you're functioning now? That's the question that we're asking today. What is the state of your political consciousness? By the way, I want to let you know that those of you who had called and written and asked me how to get involved with the Orta case, which is the Ramsey Orta, the person who took the videotape and then of Eric Garner's choking death and is now in jail, away from people who can basically relate to him, and he happens to be a key witness in that case. You can go to paypal.com, and you can, once you get there, go to the Ramsey Orta Bail Fund. It's O-R-T-A, Bail Fund at gmail.com. Orta, O-R-T-A, Bail Fund, one word, Orta Bail Fund at gmail.com. From Philadelphia, Clara, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. Good to talk with you again.
Same here.
I'm calling in response to your question at the beginning of the program. Changes in my political views and how these changes, if any, are affecting my behavior. My changes in my political views are slight, maybe more intense. I'm very progressive, and I think I might even call myself a communist at some on some level, on many levels, but I don't like that label either. So my behavior is really geared towards accepting the fact of our existence, as I see it, as Guy McPherson describes it, and helping people. Well, my motto now is, my motto is, you live as if you'll die tomorrow, you learn as if you'll live forever. And that's what's driving my behavior. Also, and teaching, and in that learning, it's teaching. I wanted to say something about, oh, yes, about being old. A couple of months ago, I celebrated my 80th birthday, and I was very happy.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you. I was very happy. It was a strange thing. I said, when I was 13, I was so happy to be a teenager. Now I'm really old. And people look at me like, what is wrong with that? But anyway, as an old person, I just thought of this description, an elder, that's what I'm striving to be.
That's right.
An elder is a person who has nothing to lose and everything to give. That's the way I see it. And I'm trying to, I reach people on a day-to-day basis. People come up to me often. Or we'll have a conversation, and I'll smile and say, oh, your teeth are pretty. I said, they're mine. Really? Then I say, I'm 80. Then we get into a conversation about health and all kinds of things.
And but how do you see this slight change that you noted? What was the impact for this slight change?
You mean
what
in
caused
the
it?
View of the age, you mean the 80, being 80? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm just, you said you experienced a slight change in your political consciousness, and I was wondering what triggered it.
The depth of my conviction, my political convictions. I think I said that in the beginning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was slight, because my convictions went deeper. You know, I think I mentioned a while back when I called, in 08 I actually voted for Obama. I wasn't anywhere near as aware of the way politics work in this country, even, what's that, 08, 6 years ago. And I think that actually, listening to PRN, I call it my second college education. Because I've learned so much. And a lot of it has validated my beliefs, and a few things have been invalidated and corrected. So I think that's what I was referring to. It really isn't slight, it's a matter of degree.
Well, this is great to hear. Thank you so much, Clara, for your call today. And many more years, I hope, ahead of you.
Well, my doctor thinks so. I hope he's right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Take care. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. How are you doing today?
Fine, thanks. How are you doing today?
I'm going okay. Before I get started, I'd like to say that I feel that we're so blessed to have PRN and to have your show. I think what you're doing on your show is a brilliant idea. And
I love
the fact that we get to have these conversations with each other and see how each other is progressing and feeling about things. And I love it. I think it's nice.
So what's the state of your political consciousness?
Yeah. I have changed. Well, I learn something new every day, and part of that is because of PRN. I learn something new every day, and I've changed over the last few years, and I've changed in the last few months my thinking about a lot of different things. Now, I will say that I don't like labels. As far as political labels, if you could put, I like to look at it like left and right, extreme left, extreme right, or whatever. It's not really a label to me. It's just whether you support what the people want or what corporations want, basically. And there are variations, but I mean, I'm way to the left. I mean, I don't even consider myself a socialist or anything like that. I just think the more I learn, the more I am convinced, and the more and more solid I become in my belief, that we need a whole new system. You don't have to label it, I mean, but if you're going to call it something, call it the people's will. But the fact is that, especially in this country, but not just in this country, everything's being ruled by multinational corporations. They get everything they want. And in this country, our government doesn't even listen to us one iota on anything unless there's overwhelming, there's 90% people calling and this type of stuff. They did that with the Syria thing, I think, or whatever. It's hard to tell. But there's a lot of things here clouding the mix. And I agree with everything, almost, that first caller called. He was a very intelligent guy, and I enjoyed listening to him.
That's Ed, yes.
Ed, one thing he said that I don't agree with, one term he used, is our leaders. I don't think we can put faith in people like that anymore, especially people who are running for office. I think it starts with us and ends with us. We are the leaders. We have to look at it that way. So that I had a problem with. But one thing he said that I agree with, that I practice myself, is you have to laugh. Because, Yatrice, I get so frustrated when I see people, like he said, they get their main news from TV and radio, and you talk to somebody about something, and they have a whole misunderstanding of everything. They just don't get it, and they're confused about a lot of things, but they think they know about a lot of things. It's like, I get so frustrated. So you have to laugh. You have to have ways of laughing, because sometimes the conversations and things can get pretty intense on your show and on PRN in general. So I seek other outlets every now and then. You know, I'll go to The Onion online. That's a comical news type deal. And then I go to people like Gerald Celente. It's funny to see him do his rants on YouTube. It's real funny. But it's still political, but it's funny. So you have to have that side of it, too. And bottom line
two
is...
Two questions to you, DX. One, are you able to recall what it is that changed your views? And two, with your views changed, how have you changed your way of interacting within those spheres of influence that you operate in?
The first question was how have what I learned changed my views?
Could you recall what it was, or the process, or the issue, or the particular event, or the moment in time where you sensed a shift in your views?
I would say that it's come in increments. I mean, I've been ratcheted up a notch ever since 9/11, basically. Because before 9/11, I knew something was wrong, and I was thinking, you know, why is the system like this? But it wasn't really ingrained in me yet. I didn't really catch it because, you know, I'm only 40. I'm 42, 43. My birthday just passed. So
hey, happy birthday
time,
to you.
I was pretty young.
Me.
Thanks. I was pretty young at that time, under 30, I guess. So I didn't really get it. But then when 9/11 happened and all these questions started rising and that third building went down, was one moment that really ratcheted me up. I said, wait a minute. This is not right. 8 hours later, or whatever it was, that building. And then I started looking online and checking different sources, and people had this theory and that theory. That ratcheted me up. Then I would say every time there's a seminal event like that or something major, it just ratcheted me up more and more to the point where, you know, nothing surprises me anymore, but it just makes me more resolute in my thinking. And what was the second part of your question?
How has that change affected the way you operate within your spheres of influence?
Well, when you start learning things, earth-shattering things that are destroy your whole reality of what you thought before, there's several ways to react to it. And I know people, you, Therese, who have went dang near crazy learning some of the things that I've learned, and they don't know when to shut it off for a minute and just leave it alone, and they just go a little nuts. They just, you know, so it can be intense. But the way I've dealt with it is I try to say to myself, on the one hand, I'm only one person. I know this. Let me try to spread it to this person, that person, that person. I'm going to say this, that I don't take it to heart that way. Let's just put it that way. But I think you know what I mean. I don't internalize this stuff because I know that whatever it is, whatever the issue is, whatever's going on, I'm one person. I cannot do so much about it. But on the other hand, it is very frustrating, and I try to deal with people in a manner that's patient, a manner that's informative. I try to relate to people in terms they can understand. So, and I believe that all this learning, all these things, has made me more patient in that way. And that's kind of the way I deal with it, if you want to put it that
thanks.
Way.
Thanks for your call today, DX. Really insightful.
Day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
888-874-4888. This is necessary work, by the way. It's a great conversation. And what it does is that it allows us to kind of do something we don't normally do. We never really stop and say, well, gee, how have I changed? It's not part of our routine to just stop and take inventory from time to time. And it's good to engage in these conversations because whether we know it or not, each of us functions as an agent of change. We are within circles that we exercise some degree of influence in or over, and so we are in a position to create change at a very micro level, perhaps, but it's still change. And if we are out of touch with the change within us, ourselves, then we're missing a really important asset in the work that we do, whether consciously or unconsciously. People are affected by the things that we do and say. So how do you come to terms with that? From time to time, you just have to stop and say, well, gee, how am I feeling about things today, and in what ways am I different? From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing, you Trace?
Fine, thank you.
All right.
And you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
So what's the state of your political consciousness in the great city of Chicago, Henry?
Well, in regards to Chicago, it's not really that great, but I do want to just give an overall view of my political consciousness in regards to us as a people within the United States. And I've always thought this before, but international interaction is one of the major things we need in order for us to beat, you know, the capitalistic corporate system that we live under. And I guess for the last couple of months or weeks, I've now understood that this is now essential to our, you know, to our goal, to be, you know, to be, I guess, more of a freer people.
Because now, the we and the our are you talking about, referring to?
Well, I guess I'm referring to, if I would say, you know, more people in my group, particularly people of color, people who aren't rich, those type of people that, typically those are the two groups that are mostly oppressed in this country. So, I guess that's what I refer to. In regards to like a political ideology, I really don't have a particular label that I have as saying, you know, what am I, you know, politically. I kind of take bits and pieces from progressive groups here and there. I don't totally agree with everything, but I don't totally disagree with everything that, you know, other groups say. I kind of, you know, analyze it and synthesize it on my own to see, you know, which would be better for, you know, my community and for me as a person. But, you know, going back to being more involved in international politics, one of the things that I think I need to do more of in my life is to go to other countries and basically have extensive stays there to see how people live. You know, I've talked to people who travel to other countries, you know, on mission reliefs and in the military, and they have basically the most profound views on how other people live. You know, we get this media hype of, you know, we're the greatest country on earth, you know, we're, you know, there's no other place to live in than America, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Even though none of these people have ever lived outside the country, so how can you tell? But I think if we take the bits and pieces from how other people live and the type of systems that they live in, we can probably, as a people, get a better grasp on how we can deal with, you know, the issues that we have within the system. Because, you know, one other thing that I'm starting to realize, too, is how capitalism is just, you know, is just a stain on American society right now. I mean, it's like it's really, really, and that's one of the things that I'm really understanding now is like capitalism is almost like a sickness now, and you hear so many people talk about how great capitalism is, and I'm like I you know, from my vantage point of a person of color and a person who's not rich, I don't see it that way. So, I mean, that's kind of like a summary of of how I'm thinking politically right now.
Impacted your political change, your change in political consciousness.
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Could you recall what impacted your political consciousness recently?
I think what really impacted my political consciousness, I guess just reading about, I've been taking some time reading a lot of financial news, Wall Street Journal. I don't typically read financial news that much, but the last couple of weeks I've been reading about, you know, certain companies laying off people, and how the economics of certain things in this country is ruining people's lives. And I think what really sparked my interest, or sparked, I guess, a watershed moment for me was when I was reading about how China is going to be projected to be the next economic superpower. And, you know, this is something that I've learned about somebody who visited China, who said that what they do with their leaders there is they send them to other countries to live for about a year, and then they come back and give a report. Because the thing is that, you know, with the Chinese, they are the ones who basically understand the international interaction and how they could use it to their advantage. So I guess you can say that would be my kind of watershed moment about how the Chinese economy is rapidly moving so fast that, you know, they're going to be the economic superpower next year, projected to be.
Well, great. Now, how has this change in you affected the way you operate on a day-to-day basis within your sphere of influence?
I guess it's made me a little bit more conscious on, the thing that I'm thinking about right now, me on a personal level, is how financially will I be able to survive in the next couple of years? I mean, I'm still a working age, and I mean, everybody's been kind of like revealing their age. I'm 41 years old, and I'm projected to have, you know, a lot of more years left in the working environment. But, you know, I started to think about, like, you know, I'm pretty sure this particular system that I'm living in will not be the same. I don't know if it's going to be something worse. I don't know if it's going to be something different. However, I do need to be prepared for what's in store for me if I live to a ripe old age of 80. So I got to understand how, you know, I got to take care of myself and how to take care of my, you know, if my wife is still around, you know, or, you know, how I'll take care of them. So it sort of got me thinking about certain things. So, you know, I started looking into stuff that I can invest in, which will be, you know, long-term investments, you know, for me. And I kind of like try to get people to understand about, you know, thinking about the future. And I guess that's what really triggered it for me, is like thinking about the future for myself personally. And it would be wise for other people to think that way, because I think, you know, as a society, we think too much of the present. You know, what's going to happen now? What are we going to do now? And I think long term, we need to start thinking what's going to happen to us as a people. You know, 5 years, 10 years, and even 20 years from now, because, you know, it could be worse, and it probably will get worse until, you know, unless we get together and fix, you know, whatever is oppressing us right now.
Well, thank you, Henry, the budding capitalist, I might add. But I get your point entirely. Thank you so much for your contribution today. 888-874-4888. Now, what we've been hearing is a really interesting account that people are giving of themselves. I think for the first time, actually, you know, you're stopping and you're thinking about the question. And we don't really do that all, you know, just as a routine. We just don't do that. We just live. But when you stop to think about it, you realize that what you call your life, part of it does not belong to you. Part of what you call your life belongs to the community in which you operate. And therefore, the work that you do in improving your life, this is now how you're thinking. You're thinking you're just living. But you are unconsciously a part of a living, breathing organism, whether it is your family, whether it is your community, whether it is your church or at work or wherever, whatever organization you might belong to. And that part of you that is evolving is the asset that you bring to these different areas that you function in and that you have some kind of influence over. And so, we are tempted to believe, because we've been conditioned to think so, that your political consciousness arrives when people tell you, okay, at 2 o'clock next week, we're going to do so and so, and that is your political consciousness. No, it isn't. Your political consciousness is a steady development. It is a steady accumulation of knowledge. It is a steady realization of the systems that you live within, and we have several overlapping systems that we live within, and your role and the interplay between you and these systems. And one of the systems is community. It's your family. And so you are always an agent of change. It doesn't stop or start at a particular time. You are always an agent of change. So we are called upon then to develop this part of ourselves as we go, and from time to time say, wow, you know, like we just heard from Henry, or we just heard from DX, who said, look, you know, 9/11 really, really did something to me. And I bet you, we don't have him available to us now, but I bet you that it took him a while to actually realize that and to realize how this has impacted on the way he thinks and operates today. The tendency for us is also to believe that things are so overwhelming. The load is so heavy that we are just overwhelmed just at the thought of lifting it. But, you know, as they say, several ants can move a mountain. So you have to develop a certain sense of hopefulness and a certain sense of optimism that the issues and events and the crises that await us and impact our lives every day, they really are truly overwhelming. But we still must persevere. We have no choice but to persevere. So we call upon ourselves to just summon up the best that we can to respond to the adverse conditions that are confronting us. We can't just retreat. We can't give up. We can't surrender at all. 888-874-4888. We still have room for a couple more calls, and we'll take your calls. Again, I just want to remind you, because this is becoming a major, major issue of time, having to do with delivering Ramzi Arta out of the clutches of the police that who have him. He is the person who took the video of Eric Garner being choked to death by police in Staten Island. If you would like to contribute, and we are hoping that the money could be raised to bail him out so that he could be available as a key witness in what should be a trial, an independent trial, go to paypal.com, enter the email address where you would like to contribute, and the email address for the Ramzi Arta Fund is Arta, O-R-T-A, Bail Fund orta@gmail.com. Orta, O-R-T-A, Bail Fund, one word, @gmail.com. And when you enter that email address, it takes you directly to where you can make your contribution, however small, however large. But that is the plan. The plan is that the community is hoping to raise $75,000 to put up for his bail. The money, of course, is will be given back when he holds to terms of the bail conditions. And so if you wish to donate to the bail fund, that's the address you go, paypal.com and Orta, O-R-T-A, bail fund at gmail.com. Well, we're close to the end of our program today. And I thought for just a moment, because we've been, you know, ping-ponging back and forth from crisis to crisis, and after a while, you know, you can, I think Ed made that point, you can feel a little bit burned out because every day there's something new just nipping at you, and you have to respond, or you feel the need to respond. But every now and then we have to pause and just take a little bit of time to ourselves, just to spend time with ourselves. How are we progressing? What is the state of our own affairs? How are we thinking? What are we feeling? What is impacting our daily lives? And how are we coping? You know, this is very important, because in the end, you can't be and won't be of any use if you're not around. And if you're not around with a sane mind and a sound body. So these things are very important. How we think informs what we do. And I can't tell you how often I engage with people in conversations, and, you know, they start telling me how political they are and whatnot. And then when you listen and you start asking a question here or there, and you find out that they really have just not examined these labels that they have assigned to themselves. They imagine themselves to be these things, but when you really boil it down, when you come down to the brass tacks, you find that there's a mile's worth of difference between what it is they think they are and what they actually are, what it is they think they believe and what they actually do believe. So this is work that we have to do. This is work that we have to do. From time to time, just take inventory, just sit back and say, well, what is my thinking about this? As we come to the close of the program, I can't tell you how distressing it was just to see that photo, yesterday put up. It was just awful, awful, awful. And the fact that it is plastered all over YouTube, I'm talking about the beheading of the journalist. I mean, I just couldn't understand why it was such a, everywhere there was this image. It was very, very disturbing. It really distressed me. It was so cruel. It was so inhumane. It was just so barbaric. And yet, in a perverse way, the media seemed to take delight in just putting it up as often as possible. You know, there's a helpless James Foley, his arms tied behind his back, and, you know, this speech by his executioner, and then, he is beheaded. And, you know, this image, it's still with me. I just can't understand why the promulgation of it, all over the place, it's just put up. It's a very bad image, very, very bad indeed. And it has affected me deeply. You know, I still am not able to just concentrate. I still see it. It's really affected me. The fact that we live in a world where people are inclined to do these barbaric things in the name, oddly, of God. You wonder, what kind of thinking is this? And how could they possibly see these acts as being in line with godly thoughts and aspirations and actions? It boggles the mind. So, you know, I paused for a while and thought about the absolute terror of James Foley at that moment. And I thought that it is the worst thing that anybody could go through. And, you know, your heart goes out to someone like that and to his family, and you send good thoughts their way. His parents are suffering immeasurably, I'm sure. All of the people associated with him and his family and friends, they're suffering terribly. But we really must find a way for the media to exercise good judgment here. This is not something that needs to be all over the airwaves and plastered all over the place. And it does not serve a good purpose at all. It is just awful, and I wish they would do something about it and just not do that. I wouldn't want to see that. I don't think anybody would want to see their loved one, or even somebody you don't even know. It's just so vulgar and so barbaric. You don't want to keep promoting that image at all. So, I thought about it. It affected me deeply. I have no trouble admitting that today. And so, you start thinking, what is it all about? What does this whole world function on? How could people reach that level where they think that this is, in fact, their political consciousness that would allow them to justify this kind of barbarity? And in the name of God and in the name of some kind of righteousness, how could you possibly reconcile the two? And what would make you, what is the thought process that debases you to the point where you see this kind of act as a logical and even necessary thing to advance your cause? It's sick beyond belief, sick beyond description. So I stop and I think about James Foley as a human being, as his family suffers, and all the people who suffer, people who die, needlessly, Michael Brown and Eric Garner and all of the people who just die needlessly. And we have to do something, but in the end, it starts with us. In the end, it starts with us being conscious about ourselves and what it is we're thinking, because what we are thinking informs what we do. Thanks so much for being with me today. Thank you for your attention. Thank you so much for your input and your insight. Always, as usual, a pleasure and a privilege to be in your company. Let me know what you're thinking. LeadStories@gmail.com. LeadStories, Eutrice Lead, on Facebook. And coming up next, Occupied Territory, America with Mike Fader. Bye-bye. Take this band.